will perform the Swan Lake Ballet by Tchaikovsky at the Storler Center for the Arts here at the State University at Stony Brook. For more information, you can call 632-7230. That's 632-7230. That's next weekend, Saturday, November 3rd at 8 p.m. and Sunday, November 4th at 2 p.m. Next Saturday, November 3rd at 8 p.m., Seth Carlin, the winner of a 1990 solo recitalist grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, will perform on forte piano works of Mozart and Haydn at the St. James Cathedral, rather, St. James Chapel at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine at 1047 Amsterdam Avenue in New York City. For more information, you can call 212-662-2133. That's 212-662-2133. And there will be a wine tasting featuring a selection of Cabernets and Chardonnays on Thursday, November 8th, here on the Stony Brook campus, here at the State University, at the new indoor sports complex. The guest speaker will be Marcia Mondavi-Borger of the Mondavi Vineyards in Napa, California. It's a program to benefit Stony Brook undergraduates, sponsored by the Faculty Staff Committee for Undergraduate Scholarships. The donation is $20 per person, and donations are tax deductible to the extent allowed by law. You must be 21 years of age or over to participate, and for more information, you can contact Michael McHale, that's Michael McHale, at 516-632-6873. That's 516-632-6873. The weather forecast tonight, increasing cloudiness, lows in the upper 30s, but 30 to 35 in Mid-Island, southwest winds, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with showers likely late in the afternoon, highs in the upper 50s, chance of rain 60%, southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy and windy with showers likely until around midnight, lows 35 to 40, chance of rain 60%. The current WUSB Stony Brook temperature is 44 degrees Fahrenheit or 7 degrees Celsius. And don't forget that tomorrow morning, that is Sunday morning, at 2 a.m., it becomes 1 a.m. as Eastern Standard Time goes back into effect. Coming up shortly, Stardate and Brain Damage here on Long Island's first station of the 90s.
The invisible ozone layer drifts on the fringes of outer space, protecting Earth from the harmful rays of the sun. The severe depletion of ozone is caused by man-made gases called chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, and halons. CFCs are still used in 10% of all aerosols, in refrigerators, styrofoam, fire extinguishers, and residential and car air conditioning. Leaky auto air conditioners are the largest source of CFC emissions. When buying a car, consider one without air conditioning. And if you do have air conditioning, get it fixed properly when it breaks. Buy non-halon fire extinguishers. Don't pack with styrofoam material. Use non-CFC foam insulation. And buy aerosol products in another form, like roll-on deodorant and liquid furniture polish. Operation Earth. You can make a difference.
Stardate October 27th. The solar system is our own neighborhood of space, and yet even distances in our solar system are large and difficult to comprehend. When talking about these distances, astronomers sometimes forsake units of measurement such as miles or kilometers in favor of a convenient little unit which they call an astronomical unit. One astronomical unit is the same as the average distance between the Earth and Sun. That's about 93 million miles. The astronomical unit, often shortened even more to AU, is a good yardstick for the solar system. It lets astronomers talk about one or a dozen AUs instead of millions or billions of miles. The use of astronomical units also provides a frame of reference for understanding the distances of objects from the Sun. For example, both Mercury and Venus orbit inward from Earth. They're each less than one AU from the Sun. Pluto, normally the outermost planet, averages about 40 AU from the Sun. The astronomical unit can also be used to understand the spacing of planets. It's interesting that as you go farther from the Sun, the spaces between planets get successively larger. Mars orbits the Sun at a distance of about 1.5 AU, or 1.5 Earth distances. The next planet out, Jupiter, lies about 5 AU from the Sun. Then comes Saturn at about 10 AU, Uranus at 19, and Neptune at 30. The planets get farther away, and the distances between their orbits get larger. Why? Nobody knows. Stardate and Stardate Magazine are produced by the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas at Austin. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
One thing I really like about Stardate is the sound quality. That's incredible. Let's see if tomorrow sounds any better. No, tomorrow sounds terrible too. What's wrong with these things? They all sound terrible. Let's see what Monday sounds like.
Stardate October 29th.
All right, Monday sounds good.
There's a star in the north right above Earth.
Okay, so you won't hear a good Stardate tomorrow, but you will hear a good one on Monday. I don't know why this is, but we'll get to the bottom of it, I promise. Nice 17-minute classical show there, Jim.
Thank you.
You really were on the air for only 17 minutes tonight. Is that the shortest classical show you've ever done?
Maybe not. I might have done a 10-minute one once. My short ones are the most popular.
They certainly are.
Popular I am.
There's no question about that. Well, thanks for coming by, even though it was for an abbreviated time.
My pleasure.
And you're on your way out now, huh?
Yes.
Well, you best be off then.
Yes.
Okay, this is a public service announcement.
Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Centereach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
And we have another benefit concert going on right now, even as we speak, downstairs at the bi-level of the Union, so if you want to come by, it's still not too late. We have three bands down there, and I believe the first one has just started. We're hearing from Citizens Arrest, Lie Detectors, and Seizure. Hold on. That's the same fly that's been annoying the whole studio for the last week, isn't it?
Staff fly.
It's going to be a staff dead fly in a few minutes if he keeps this up. Sorry about that, folks. Most radio stations don't swat flies on the air, but most radio stations don't have as many flies as we do. Okay. Oh, yeah, that Stardate was great, wasn't it? Anyway, this is Brain Damage. Eric Corley here until midnight. And it's not really the custom at Halloween to play a nice piece from the Firesign Theater known as The Further Adventures of Nick Danger. It's not a habit, it's not a custom or anything like that, but we're hoping to start it as such. What better custom to start than to hear this every year at this time? We'll be back afterwards and taking phone calls and having all kinds of fun. In the meantime, get close to your radio, sit down. Can you hear this? The fly is right next to the microphone. Hold on, I'm trying to... He's on the microphone. I don't believe this. This is awful. This must be like a DJ come back as a fly or something. This fly won't let me speak into the... This is awful. Okay. I think I got him that time. No, I didn't get him. Oh, boy. Okay, we're gonna go into this. We haven't gotten into it yet, I promise. No. No, it's much more realistic than what you're hearing now. We'll be back afterwards taking phone calls and talking about all kinds of other things. And, yeah, sit tight next to your radio, pay attention, think, and all that kind of thing.
Los Angeles, he walks again by night. Out of the fog, into the smog. Relentlessly, ruthlessly.
I wonder where Ruth is.
Doggedly, toward his weekly meeting with... the unknown. At 4th and Drucker, he turns left. At Drucker and 4th, he turns right. He crosses MacArthur Park and walks into a great sandstone building.
Oh, my nose!
Groping for the door, he steps inside. Climbs the 13 steps to his office. He walks in. He's ready for mystery. He's ready for excitement. He's ready for anything. He's...
Nick Danger, Third Eye.
I want to order a pizza to go and no anchovies.
No anchovies? You've got the wrong man. I spell my name, Danger.
What?
makers of fantastic cigarettes, long in the leaf and short in the can, bring you another true story from the tattered casebook of Nick Danger, Third Eye. Let's join him now in the adventure we call...
Cut him off at the pass!
Let's get down to business. Uncross those beautiful stems of yours, baby. Here's the case I call number 666. It all began innocently enough on Tuesday. I was sitting in my office on that drizzly afternoon, listening to the monotonous staccato of rain on my desktop and reading my name on the glass of my office door. Regnad Kissin. My secretary lay snoring on the floor, her long, beautiful gams pinioned under the couch. I didn't hear him enter, but my nostrils flared at the smell of his perfume. Pyramid patchouli. There was only one joker in L.A. sensitive enough to wear that scent, and I had to find out who he was.
Good afternoon, Mr. Danger. I'm Rocky Rococo.
Thanks, Half Pint. You just saved me a lot of investigative work.
Maybe yes, maybe no. Do you know what this is?
I had to think for a minute. What cruel game was he playing?
That's a brown paper bag.
That's correct. Now, look inside, Mr. Danger. What do you see?
That's easy. That's a pickle.
Very good. Now, I think you're ready for this.
Why, that's nothing but a two-bit ring from a crackerback, Jocks.
I'll sell it to you for $5,000.
What kind of a chump do you take me for?
First class.
That tarnished piece of tin is worthless.
Worthless? Not to Melanie Haber.
Melanie Haber?
You may remember her as Audrey Farber.
Audrey Farber?
Susan Underhill?
Susan Underhill?
How about Betty Jo Bielowski?
Betty Jo Bielowski. I hadn't heard that name since college. Everyone knew her as Nancy. Then it all came rushing back to me like the hot kiss at the end of a wet fist. It was pig night at the Omane Padme Sigma house. We had escaped from the crowd and stood trembling under the dwarf maple.
Oh, Nicky, I don't know what to say. This is the most beautiful ring I've ever seen.
Yeah, Nancy, it's really neat. It cost me $5,000.
Oh, Nicky, how can I ever repay you?
Well, gee whiz, Nancy. How about 500 down and a 36-month contract?
What?
Or you could marry me.
That's impossible, Nick. I can't marry you. I can't even tell you why. Maybe someday.
All right, Nancy. I understand. Sign here.
Oh, Nick. I'll never forgive you.
And I'll never forget you neither, Nancy. And that's why I called you today, Nancy. I mean, Mrs. Haber. Something reminded me of that time so long ago under the dwarf maples.
I don't know what prompted you to get in touch with me, but you called just in the nick of time.
You haven't lost your delicate sense of humor, have you, Nancy?
What? Think. I can't talk to you now. You have to get out here right away. My husband, it's the same old place in Santa Barbara, Nicky. Oh, hurry, Nicky, I need you. I can't...
Nancy! I slipped the ring into my nose and the receiver into my pocket and headed for the door quickly. But I'd forgotten the little man with the evil grin.
Just a second, Danger. What about my pickle?
You're lucky you still have your brown paper bag, small change.
Danger, you haven't seen the last of me.
No, but the first of you turns my stomach.
You're being dirty from me again, Danger.
I headed down the hall in the opposite direction toward the fire escape. I hadn't a moment to lose.
Hey, Danger.
Where's the fire?
In your eyes, Lieutenant Bradshaw.
Don't get wise with me, Peeper. You're lucky we didn't burn you on the Anselmo pederasty case.
Look, you caught him, didn't you?
Yeah, but the punk got away, no thanks to you.
Well, what brings your flat feet sniffing around here now, copper?
Just a friendly word of advice, Danger.
Yeah, what?
Don't go sticking your big nose into police business.
Sure, Lieutenant. Is that all?
No. Don't talk with your mouth full.
Okay, Bradshaw.
And don't fidget while I talk to you.
Sure,
and
Lieutenant.
Stop tracking mud and cause my knife.
Okay. When I hit the street, the rain had already turned L.A. into a mud river. It was a short swim down Alvarado to my convertible. I had to get to Santa Barbara in a big hurry.
As I whipped onto Mulholland Drive, the lights were just twinkling on across the San Fernandino Valley. I could barely make them out through the driving rain. Then, a hard right down Big Tujunga Canyon. My tires squealed as I hit Sepulveda. A right, a left, a left, another right, a left of the body, a right, and into a gas station. Hey, Pop!
All right, hold your horses, I'm coming.
Hey, yeah?
Where am I?
You can't get there from here.
But I'm looking for the same old place.
Oh, you must mean the old same place, sonny. It's right out back. Here's the key.
4 hours later, I parked my car in the carriage house and walked up the gray gravel driveway between a line of dwarf maples toward the pillared entrance of the same mansion. It had been snowing in Santa Barbara ever since the top of the page, and I had to shake the cornstarch off my mucklucks as I lifted the heavy obsidian door knocker. Hey in there! Open up! Your door knocker fell off!
What's all this brouhaha?
Brouhaha?
Ha ha ha. Ha ha ha.
Wait a minute. Don't you want this door knocker?
I already have one.
But this is yours.
You see? I told you. We used to have another one, but he vanished mysteriously. All right, come in out of the cornstarch and dry your mucklucks by the fire. Let me introduce myself. I am Nick Danger.
No, let me introduce myself. I am Nick Danger.
If you're so smart, why don't you pick up your cues faster?
Are those my cues?
Yes, and they must be dry by now. Why don't you pull them up out of the cellophane before they scorch? All right, sir. May I take your hat and coat?
Yes.
I assume you've come to see my mistress, Mr. Danger.
I don't care about your private life or what his name is. I've come to see Nancy... Mrs. Haber.
Mrs. Haber?
Audrey Farber.
Audrey Farber?
How about Betty Jo Bialowski?
Oh, you mean Nancy. Well, she's in the aviary studying trees. I shall return with her straight away. You may wait here in the sitting room, or you can sit here in the waiting room.
There was something fishy about the butler. I think he was a Pisces, probably working for scale. I felt a thin shiver run up my spine as I sat down on the cold marble floor. What was it about this place? The atmosphere was as phony as the Tudor balustrade that leered at me from the top of the staircase. And there she stood, radiant. All those curves showing through that flimsy burnous.
Nick?
It was Nancy running down the stairs. All the familiar sounds and smells of pig night came rushing back like a good snort of scotch. Then it struck me. 20 years later, and she still knocked me out.
Nick,
where am I?
Nick, wake up. Are you all right?
Yes.
Oh, then stop slapping me.
Nancy. What's the bird's eye lowdown on this caper? Whatever that means.
Nick, we can't talk here. We can't talk here.
What do you mean we can't talk here?
We can't talk.
You're right, we can. What's the way to do?
Follow me.
This way.
This is much better. We're at the chapel now. It's soundproof, so no one can hear us.
What did you say?
I said no one can...
What?
Never mind. Follow me.
What?
Here, take my hand. This way. Much better.
Yeah. Pretty fancy layout you've got here, Nancy. What's this, your boudoir?
Oh, no, these are the kennels.
Putting on the dog, eh? Well, say, where are all the doggies?
They've mysteriously disappeared.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I just told you. Along with the servants, they were very attached to one another.
Where?
At the wrist and ankles.
Wait a minute. You said all the servants had disappeared.
Did I?
What about your butler?
You mean... Catherwood?
Yes, madam.
Catherwood! Oh, you startled me.
I'm sorry, madam.
What are you doing there on all fours?
I'm looking for my script. Why don't you just go on without me?
Listen, Nancy, I smell a rat.
So do I. I think he's got my script.
Oh, yes, Catherwood, you look for it, all right?
All right, madam.
Nick, quickly, through the sacred panel.
All right.
This is
the portrait gallery.
This is the portrait... There's an echo in here. This is the portrait gallery, Nick. It's the safest room in the mansion.
Mm.
No one can find us here.
All right, Nancy. Get your hands off me.
What's the scoop?
Chocolate, butterscotch, or Rocky Rococo. Road!
That reminded me. How had she gotten herself involved with that slimy weasel Rococo? And how do I make my voice do this?
Oh, Nicky, Nick, Nick. It all began 20 years ago with the mysterious disappearance of my husband.
You mean you were already married when I sold you that ring?
No wonder she hadn't been able to make the payments.
What?
So that was your secret. Oh, what a sap I've been.
Oh, yes. But that night, the strangest thing happened.
That usually goes along with being just married.
My husband, Johnny, he... Oh, Nick, I want to tell you the horrible truth, the whole truth, all of it. The man behind everything.
Gee, madam.
Let me handle this, Nancy. Far out, Catherwood. Just roll a couple of bombers and leave them on the side table.
Yes, madam. Oh, I say. Pardon me, madam. I seem to have crashed. It's been such a long exposition, you know. I'm so tired.
Catherwood.
Yes,
sir. Catherwood, can't you see you're upsetting Nancy? Leave us alone.
Well, how much would you like, sir? 500? 1,000?
I'm Scray Osterbay.
Oh, of course, sir. No kooka choop, sir.
Isn't it?
Yes. I'm so tired, I haven't slept.
All right, Nancy, go on with your story. Start with your dreadful secret.
Oh, Nick, I can't. I'm so confused.
Well, why don't you just hold your thumb next to your line? See, like this. Huh? This way I don't get confused and I never lose my place.
I feel faint. The whole world is spinning.
Why, that's lucky for us, Nancy. If it were flat, all the Chinese would fall off. Why, she's no fun. She fell right over. Wait a minute. Didn't I say that line on the other side of the record? Where am I? I'd better check.
Who is now?
It's okay. They're speaking Chinese. Poor Nancy. She's fainted. I'll just wrap her skirt around her head like this to keep her warm. And now I'll press her body close to mine to keep me warm.
She looked so helpless there, spread eagled on the floor. I beat the eagle off and gave her a quick mouth-to-mouth resuscitation job. And then it struck me.
What a sap she had.
Ah, good girl, Nancy. That ought to hold him for a while.
Oh, poor Nicky. He's bleeding. I'll tear this strip off my petticoat.
There. You want to?
Ah, there. You tie him up with this. I'll go through his pockets.
All right. Oh. Careful. Don't wake him up.
Oh, that contract must be on him somewhere.
Oh, Audrey.
You
sure?
What?
Can't you find the contract yet? Your time is almost up.
Rococo, you slimy blackmailer. How did you get in here? You don't have a key?
No, only half a key.
What?
I had to spin it with a sound effects man.
Oh.
Where's the contract you absent mind at all?
Wait a minute. Here it is. I found it. It was taped to his leg.
Give me that.
Oh.
I've got it at last.
All right. Now maybe you'll leave us in peace, Rococo. Give me the negative.
Of course. Here it is.
Oh, at last. Now we're out of your evil clutches.
Dan, wait a minute. Look at this negative. It isn't us. It's an interesting approach, but it isn't us.
She's right. What are you trying to pull on me, Rococo?
Oh, my goodness. I must have sent the wrong negative to the police. I must have left yours in the car. I'll lock her. I'll go get her.
A second, Rococo. You're not going nowhere until you've explained what you've done with that filthy piece of blackmail.
Are you threatening me? Why, you stupid toad. I ought to beat your brain out.
No, put down that pickle.
You'll never get away with this, Rococo.
Oh, yeah? Didn't you ever see Casablanca?
The thick veil of pain lifted enough for me to eyeball the situation. Rococo, that sleazy weasel, how did he get in here? And what was he doing with that pickle in one hand and my contract in the other? I had no choice. Nancy and the old butler were frozen with terror. I struggled quietly to my feet and flung myself head first at Rococo's stomach.
Thank you. You saved our life.
This ain't no time for ticker tape parades, baby. Get me out of these ropes and into a good belt of scotch.
Let me hold that contract for you, Mr. Danger.
I'll keep that contract, Catherwood. But you can take this pickle off my hands.
Oh, no, I think you better hold on to that, Nick.
Good thinking, sweetheart. Lieutenant Bradshaw will need all the evidence he can get.
Yes. And you should stick around, too, Danger. You can help him put all the pieces together, you know.
Right.
No, a left.
Oh! I felt like I was being kicked in the head by the whole chorus line at Minsky's. So Nancy was in on this caper. I felt myself going under. The biggest long shot, Louis at Hialeah, wouldn't put a fin on my fate now. This time, something told me I was out for lunch. I even began to hear things.
Keep your nose on the business,
All right, hold it right where you are. I'm Lieutenant Bradshaw with a piece of advice for you. Now, here in the studio, it's all knuckles and know-how. But when that red light goes off, I'm just plain Harry Ames, citizen and weekend father. Now, take a tip from a cop who does. Radio work can be just as dirty and exciting as hunting down public enemy number one. So when I get home, my old lady knows what I need and how. A warm, heaping bowl full of Loosener's castor oil flakes with real glycerin vibrafoam. It doesn't just wash your mouth out. It cleans the whole system right on down the line. So come on, you little rookies. Tell your mom to get on it and do it every day. Just remember what the guys down at the precinct house sing.
Oh, it ain't no use if you ain't got the boost you get from Loosener's. Loosener's.
The all-weather breakfast. And now we return you to Act 3 of Nick Danger, Third Eye.
When the crazy escalator ride ended, I fought my way back up to the land of the living. I came to slumped over in the front seat of my own car, lying in a pool of cheap rock gut. I had a head full of ideas that were driving me insane and a mouthful of cotton candy.
You want some more cotton candy, Danger? It might sober you up.
Oh, my head. Bradshaw, baby.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd be happy to see your ugly mug.
Save the wisecracks for the warden, Danger. I got you this time, and I got you good.
What are you talking about?
Get out of that car.
Hey, come on.
If you can stand up and keep your hands high, I got you covered.
Hey, what's this all about, Bradshaw? You know I never carry a rod.
Yeah, but it's murder what some people can do with a car, and I got witnesses to prove it.
Keep me away from him.
Take it easy, little lady.
I don't know why you're doing this, Nancy, but it doesn't change my feelings about you.
Come on, Nick, you're such a...
All right, take it easy, little lady. All right, now let's get these facts straight. Take this down, Henderson. Okay, Professor, how did it happen?
Well, Sergeant...
Lieutenant.
Yes, Mrs. Barber and I were sitting right here in the living room engaged in a friendly round of spin the pickle, weren't we, dear? Yes, with our good friend Mr. Rococo. Yes, and then suddenly the door flew open and this drunken madman right here drove in, honking wildly and headed straight for us.
He's lying, Professor!
Can it, Danger?
Yes, at the last possible moment, he stopped on a dime.
I see.
Unfortunately, the dime was in Mr. Rococo's pocket.
I'm going to break your neck.
All right. Hold it, Danger. I've heard enough. We'll get the rest of the story down at the station house from you. I've been waiting for this for years.
Wise up, Bradshaw.
Week in and week out.
I didn't
Danger
do it.
Playing second fiddle while you got all the girls.
Come on.
I'm tired of being Mr. Nice Guy. See, there's going to be some changes made. Next week, this show is going to be called...
Sergeant Bradshaw,
Lieutenant.
District Attorney!
I'm going to have my own theme music, and it's all going to take place in Washington, D.C. No plots, just girls and guys doing nice, simple things up against Nazis and fifth columnists, and no Jewish writers, either.
I saw my chance, and I took
my name in the paper.
Bradshaw would never listen to my story now. I have more
Lindbergh,
holes in it than I've ever had. My only way out was...
Catherwood, stop it. I've got Bradshaw's rod pressed against Nancy's terror. Now you spill the beans or I'll blow her brain out.
I think you're bluffing, Flatfoot. No, you weren't bluffing.
All right, talk.
It all began 20 years ago. I was a freshman in college then, although you wouldn't hardly believe it to look at me now. I had just completed work on my science project and... And I invited Nancy down to reveal the secret, too. Well, this is it, Nancy. How do you like it?
So this is where you've been every night since we got
sure
married.
Sure is.
Oh, Nicky, I thought you were...
Danny, but don't say it, Nancy. I know it's been hard, but I wanted to give you the swellest honeymoon a girl had ever had. We're going to Greece.
And swim the English Channel?
No. To ancient Greece, where burning Sappho loved and sang and stroked the wine-dark sea in the temple by the moonlight wa-da-doo-da.
What?
Don't you see, Nancy? I built the perfect time machine.
Oh, it sounds dangerous.
Yes, that's why I'm going to try it out first. Now, when I get into this grandfather clock, you hit me over the head with this bottle of champagne right here.
Oh.
Set the dial for 1,000 and put in 3 dimes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be gone for 1,000 years.
1,000? Oh, that's longer than anyone's ever been gone before.
But to you it will seem only like a minute. Very well, my love. Now, forward into the past!
I hope he gets back before all this dry ice melts. Who's there?
Mrs. Haber?
Who's that?
I'm Rocky Rococo. You may have seen me loitering around the drugstore drinking chocolate malted Vulcans and giving away free high school.
What are you doing here? What do you want?
I'm here for a friend, Mrs. Haber. If you sign a contract, you're supposed to keep up the payment.
Oh, you must be a friend of Nick.
Yes.
But he couldn't buy this money already. He only gave me the ring last night. I'm wearing it, see?
Yes, that's a very pretty hand you have there.
I've been to ancient Greece. Look at this grape.
Oh. Who are you, old man? What have you done with my husband?
What do you mean, Nancy? I am your husband. Well, who's that ugly dwarf with his hand in your mouth?
Rocky Rococo at your cervix.
All right, Catherwood. I've heard just enough.
What? Listen, I'm telling this story, young man. What are you doing in my flashback?
Flashback? What are you talking... Flashback. All right, all of you. You stay right where you are. Put your thumbs on your place in your script while I figure this out.
So that was her horrible secret. Poor Nancy, married to a man 1,000 years old. Now I understood why the servants had disappeared. It was Catherwood who killed Rococo to protect his wife, my Betty Jo.
Who is he talking to? How does he make his voice do that?
All right, Bradshaw, there's your confession. I hope you got it all down. Bradshaw? Bradshaw. Oh, that's right. He's on this flashback. Skip ahead a bit. No, I can't skip ahead. All right, everybody. Into the time machine.
No. You don't understand how radio works. Now, this is my flashback. All I have to do to return us to the present is fade my voice out like this and cue the organist. And you see, here we are.
Oh, my goodness.
What's happening? Am I seeing double? There's two of everybody except me.
Pandemonium was breaking out all around me.
Wait a minute.
Who are you?
I was here first. You imposter. Take that.
Terrible. You keep away from him, you young hussy.
Who are you calling a hussy, you old bag?
Well, how dare you talk to me like that?
Talk to me anyway I like.
Oh, don't nerve. I'm not you. You're me 20 years ago.
What? You ever let a nerve say I'm going to look like that in 20 years?
Oh, yeah?
There ain't room enough in this dress for both of us. Hey, get your knife.
Well, this is a bit of fun.
Yes, certainly is, Dad.
Glad to have someone my own age to talk to after all these years.
Why don't we sing something?
Well, I've forgotten the key.
Oh, that's all right. I've got a lid out in the car.
David?
Outcast woman, living a life apart. Where did your story begin?
Can you see someone has been crushed here under this car? Oh, my God, it's me. I don't look at all well. I'm dead. I've been killed. Oh, this hasn't happened to me since M.
I hit a quick 20-20 on the whole scene.
I thought that I was the only one going insane. But now we are all in this together.
I don't know what I had to do.
I didn't like it, but I've never done that before. All right, everybody, take off your...
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this scheduled transmission to bring you an announcement of national importance from the White House in Washington, D.C. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans. This morning at 6:25 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, combined elements of the Imperial Japanese Navy and our forces ruthlessly attacked our naval base at Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands. I have conferred this morning with the Congress and the Chiefs of Staff in emergency session. We have reached our rendezvous with destiny. It is our unanimous and irrevocable decision that the United States of America unconditionally surrender. And now my wife and I would like to return with you for the thrilling conclusion of Private Nick Danger, Third Eye.
Well, I've solved another one for you.
Danger, I'll never know how you do it. I was sure I had the goods on you this time.
Well, Bradshaw, it's like in the army, you know. The great prince issues commands, founds states, vests families with fiefs. Inferior people should not be employed.
Nick, I can't knock success, but you still put me through too many changes.
The makers of Loosener's Castor Oil Flakes and Fantastic Cigarettes. Loosener's for the smile of beauty, Fantastic's for the smile of success, and brought you the transcribed adventures of Nick Danger, Third Eye. Tune in again next week, same time, same station, when Nick Danger meets the Arab.
All
right, let's do the little...
Roll it.
Yeah, this one. Okay, Phil, you put on the ball pit. We'll go to the other side. Something she said.
How much time? How much time have we got?
How much time we got?
Why don't you say that? Okay, well, that's that.
Yeah.
How much time?
Oh, look at this. Okay,
Cyrus. We're on now.
Cyrus,
do we have
to...
I'm
going
over to the other side of the record.
Yeah.
I'm going to come in from
well,
the...
Well, how much? How long does it take to get over to the
okay,
other
okay,
side?
Okay, wait a minute.
Is something we haven't got?
Come on,
have you got your ball,
babe? Right.
Come on, look. Let's just do it.
Has anybody got my script?
Cyrus. Here you go. Scene 3, take 600.
And I hate to break in here, but we're not going to go to the other side. I'm sorry, because we've got too much else to do here tonight on Brain Damage. That was a classic for you, and we play it every year at this time. Starting this year, we're going to do that. Firesign Theater and the further adventures of Nick Danger. And if I can look over this record quickly enough, I might be able to figure out what year that was from. 1969? Well, somewhere back in either in the early 70s or late 60s. I would say probably, no, 1969. July 1969 from the album How Can You Be in Two Places at Once When You're Not Anywhere at All? Pretty logical question, if you ask me. Well, good evening. It is Brain Damage. It is Saturday night. We'll be taking phone calls. We'll be talking about Halloween and Election Day and that kind of thing. And we'll be checking in on the tripods, of course, at about 11 o'clock after last week's action-packed adventure. Doesn't seem like there's much left that can happen, but that's the beauty of radio. Anything's possible. And this is Julie Cruz. We'll be right back. For the slam dancers downstairs. If you're good, you can slam to this. Thank you. what a haunting melody that is. Julie Cruz. And you can find that in two places. You can find that off her album, which I believe is titled the same as that, Into the Night. I'm pretty sure that's the name of the album. And that came out last year. Or you can find it on the soundtrack of Twin Peaks, which came out about a month ago. Julie Cruz here on this chilly autumn night. It's 7 degrees Celsius, 45 on the Fahrenheit scale. And not as cold as last night, not as windy as last night. But that was simply a precursor to the things that are ahead. Perfect weather for the events that are coming in the next week, such as Halloween, Election Day, that kind of thing. You know, one of those nice windy nights with a full moon where you can see the clouds way up there going by at a very high speed. Those are the days that are ahead of us. Halloween, yes, it's only a couple of days away. Kind of brings out magical moments, you know, and some of us brings back memories, some of us it makes us plan for the future. A story out of Stony Haven, New York. Stony Haven, in fact, being the town that the tripods that we will hear from later are from. A town that is not really on the map. That is, not officially on the map. Some people write it in on the map. Not many people want it to be on the map, but it doesn't mean there's not a wealth of stories that come out of the place. You know, it's suburbia. And in suburbia, you get all kinds of tales of sorrow, tragedy, passion, and adventure. A lot of adventure in suburbia. Anyway, just like all the other places, Halloween comes once a year in Stony Haven. But not unlike a powerful earthquake, the aftershocks may be felt for some time afterwards. Now, Stony Haven is considered by many to be a divided town. You know, over on the northern perimeter, you have most of the old houses and estates where all those traditional values are upheld and where the roads are narrow. But as you move southward, you detect a very vivid change. Where there used to be all this farmland, there's now a series of developments. Factory houses, the people of old Stony Haven called them. You can understand that because they do all pretty much look the same, at least from the outside. And the people who live in the development part of Stony Haven don't really care all that much for all those rich folks who live on the water. Sounds rather tense, but there's not about to be a war or a class struggle or anything like that between the two sides of town. Let's just say the differences are there, and the differences have been noted. Well, Halloween tends to exacerbate these differences, probably more so than any other holiday, just because of the different ways that people celebrate it. For instance, in the north, where all the rich folks are, there are parties, sometimes on the beach, depending on the weather, but mostly inside these large, spacious houses where people dress up in all kinds of outrageous costumes. There's always plenty of food and drink and dancing and talking. And usually, there are about 12 really big parties like this in Stony Haven. In fact, there's probably a couple going on right now. On a weekend. Though there'll be some happening on Halloween night as well. And some probably next weekend. Almost all of those huge parties, they'll take place in the old part of town. Because in the new section, things just aren't the same. I mean, there are parties too, but they're much smaller, they don't last as long. Here in the southern part of town, the main thrust of the holiday is the theory that all rules are suspended for a day, and that it's a day to simply go crazy. And this is exactly what they do. It starts off with the kids. And to a great extent, it remains with the kids. It's a great day for kids in Stony Haven, especially those in the heart of developments, because there are houses in every direction, and each house has something inside it that you can get. And almost every kid has a different way of getting it. Now, this story comes from last year. These are all authenticated, documented facts. I have my sources. This kid named Jason, who lives in the bird section, that's a cluster of houses where all the streets are named after birds, Sparrow Lane, Blue Jay Way, Penguin Court. Anyway, Jason had the whole thing figured out. Thursday, was it Thursday last year? Whatever day it was that Halloween was, it was a school day, I know that much. And there was a limit to the amount of time that that you can spend going around gathering your various goods. True happiness, after all, is when Halloween falls on the weekend and you can spend every waking hour collecting. So Jason figured he had to be in school from 9:30 to 2:30, normal school hours. But that left a couple of good hours before school to get started. And a few of our Stony Haven listeners may have been awakened by Jason as he started his rounds at 7 a.m. You have to admit, though, he didn't really have much choice in the matter. It starts getting dark these days a little after 4, then the big kids come out. Jason was only 8. He did not want to be around for the big kids. He'd heard rumors. He didn't want to find out if they were true or not. He just wanted what was rightfully his. So, he devised a map, figured out the approximate time for each house, and came up with an estimate of where he should be by 9 a.m., at which time he would be almost back to his house again, and he would simply lug his bag full of stuff into the house and run out to catch the bus. Now, as almost any Bible salesman will tell you, when one is going door to door with the intent of obtaining something from the people on the other side of the door, it becomes very hard to make predictions as to where you will be or what you will wind up getting. Some people aren't home, and others are home, which sometimes winds up being worse, especially when they decide to talk to you for half an hour. Kind of throws your whole schedule out of sequence. It was worse for Jason, though, as he plodded his way from house to house in his development. Because for one thing, people somehow didn't seem happy to see him when they opened the door. Didn't make much sense, but that's what seemed to be happening. Nobody told him how cute his little ghost costume was. He wondered what was wrong. How could a whole neighborhood be in a bad mood at the same time? Just never crossed his mind that most people weren't up at that time in the morning and that almost no one enjoyed answering the door before 9 o'clock. It seemed the most natural thing in the world to Jason, though. Anyway, he tried not to let it get him down and continued on his way. Now, when you go trick-or-treating, there are these special bags you're supposed to use to collect the goodies. We've all seen them, and there's also the special bags that you're supposed to use to wrap up the goodies when you're giving them away. It's a good season for bag makers. All kinds of bags, plastic, paper, you name it. Anyway, when you're going from house to house and throwing things into the bag, you very quickly come to the realization that the bag gets too heavy to carry well before the material inside fills up. In fact, most kids have to make a pit stop to empty the bag when it's only 1/8 full. I don't know if anyone caught the studies on this that were released last year, but no one has ever been able to hold a bag that was more than a quarter at the most filled. And after that, there are other risks that come into play. This fact comes as a bit of a shock to most kids, and it sure came as a shock to Jason when he realized that he might have to go home early to empty the bag or risk having the ultimate horror occur. The ultimate horror is when your Halloween bag splits on the bottom and all of your candy winds up on the street. This didn't really seem like a strong possibility, especially when the bag was designed for this kind of thing and only that kind of thing. But Jason was more worried that the bag might get too heavy for him to carry. So he made a change in his plans. He'd skip over some of the houses in the middle part of his development. He'd skip Cardinal Lane and Hummingbird Lane, maybe even Crow Street. He wanted to head to the far side of the development. Actually, it was the northern side of the development. The side of the development that was closest to the old part of town where the rich people lived. Still a good few miles away from there, but it was in that direction. It was rumored that since these people lived closer to the rich people than anyone else in the development, well, they must be kind of well off, too. Anyway, it must have taken Jason 20 minutes to get to the other side of the development, and as he started to knock on doors, it soon became apparent that this was one rumor that was completely unfounded. He was getting the same candy corns, the same solitary Hershey bars, the same pack of chewing gum from these people as he did from everybody else. And Jason concluded that everyone in the development was equal, which was rather disappointing. After a short time, Jason decided to see what time it was, so he asked the lady that answered the next door. 8:45, she snapped and closed the door. He still couldn't understand why everyone was in such a horrible mood. But he didn't have time to think about that. If it was 8:45, he'd had exactly 20 minutes to get clear across the development and to his bus stop. And it was a 20-minute run. Jason had to run like crazy in order to get to his house on time. And he would not have made it. Most certainly, he would not have made it. Were it not for Mr. Binder, who was passing by in his car after going down to the local convenience store to pick up a quart of milk. Seeing his little next-door neighbor Jason in a ghost outfit running down the street, realizing something must be wrong, asked him if he needed a ride. Jason said yes, jumped in the car, and was dropped off at his house a full 5 minutes before the bus came. So the story kind of has a happy ending. In fact, Jason noticed as he was getting on the school bus how happy everybody seemed, laughing, giggling, making jokes, nudging each other, pointing at Jason. Why were they pointing at Jason? Well, it became apparent when he arrived at school, and one of his teachers complimented on him, on his choice in costumes. Said she always liked ghosts herself. One of the many stories coming out of Stony Haven. Everybody has their own way of doing things. Another kid who lives in the hardware section, his name is Jimmy, lives on Hammer Lane. He had his own system figured out, too, and I think this is probably a lot closer than to something that most of us have done at some point. He's been planning this system for quite some time, and what he had was a total of 7 different costumes. A gorilla, cowboy, Boy George, a few others. Jimmy had already realized that everybody in his development was about equal. So he didn't really see the point in wandering all over the neighborhood where he'd get pretty much the same stuff over and over again. It would be a heck of a lot easier on him if he limited his entire trick-or-treating excursion to 2 or 3 blocks and just kept repeating the same houses in different costumes. Well, it worked remarkably well, and Jimmy collected more than any of his friends. But Jimmy ran into the same problem that Jason and the Bible salesman had, unpredictability. It was impossible to predict how long it would take to complete a round. And as a result, Jimmy wound up making a big mistake. Yeah, he had just finished with costume number 6. It was 4:15. Jimmy wondered if he should go out again. Would he have enough time to make it before darkness set in? He decided to give it a try. If it got dark, he could always turn back. But something else happened that he hadn't counted on. People began to get a lot more generous. All of a sudden, he was getting 2 or 3 bags from people that only gave him 1 before. He couldn't understand it, and he knew he would be crazy if he stopped. There was money to be made here, things to be picked up. But Jimmy realized the magnitude of his error when he found himself over on Crowbar Avenue, just as the moon was rising. He was only about 10 minutes away from his house when he heard a sound that made him freeze in fear. He heard the big kids, the teenagers. They were out, and they were making noise. Oh, there's nothing more scary to a kid under 10 years of age to hear a pack of teenagers. And there were well over 100 of them, 100 teenagers walking down the street at the same time. Total lunacy. The shaving cream was out, the toilet paper was out. And they didn't really stop at any houses, they just kind of walked down the street, knocking everything out of their way as they came. Cars, little dogs, bicycles, whatever. Jimmy was one of the lucky ones. He was able to hide in the bush for the 10 minutes or so that it took for everybody to pass by. But it had a traumatic effect. Had a very traumatic effect. I think he's staying in this year. And, of course, many people think it makes a lot of sense, you know, that Halloween comes so close to Election Day. You know, Halloween is the perfect lead-in for Election Day. I don't know if anyone's realized that. I mean, you've got these two holidays where people act very bizarre getting ready for them. Let's put it that way. Out of character. Well, Election Day in Stony Haven last year was no exception to that either. I remember last year for Stony Haven residents, last year Election Day meant an end to an 11-month campaign of bitter hatred that had dominated the race for village clerk. That's right, village clerk. Now, there are only 2 positions in the neighborhood that people vote for. One is the mayor, who is elected for a 4-year term, and the other is the village clerk, which is a 2-year term. Why anybody would want to be the village clerk of Stony Haven is beyond me. The pay is $45 a month. The hours are long, and about the most exciting thing the village clerk gets to do is type up the legal notices and send them to the local papers. And one day, 20 or 30 years from now, they can thumb through an old yellow newspaper, do that with their grandchildren, say they can remember the day when they wrote the exception list to Ordinance 2L-362C, subsection 13. It's the kind of job that really gives you a feeling of power. You know, one of those masculine things. Town clerk, yeah. Village clerk, whichever. I guess that's why every 2 years the campaign for village clerk is marked by such bitterness and foul name-calling. Such a magnitude, it almost threatens to put Stony Haven on the map. Well, last year, Democrat Elliot Grosschild was the incumbent. He was elected back, way back in 1985. Mercy me. And Elliot was running on the platform that nothing really bad has happened in Stony Haven in the last few years. No sewer scandals, no unpaid parking tickets. Everything seems to be in order. Angela Maverick, on the other hand, was the challenger last year for that position. And if you happen to remember the full-page ads that she was buying in the Stony Haven News, well, you might have gotten a very different picture of the situation. Where was Elliot Grosschild? Was her campaign slogan. On January 21st, 1988, Fred Hansen's house burned to the ground. Elliot Grosschild was attending a party in St. James. Is this responsible behavior? Or, on Christmas Day of 1988, 100 Stony Haven homes had a 10-minute blackout. Elliot Grosschild was nowhere to be found. And it got worse. You know, it started up in the spring. And intensified over the summer. In fact, one day over the summer, Elliot's wife was frying some fish that they had just bought at the market when her best friend Pamela called. Pamela, who she had not spoken to in about 6 months. And after about 20 minutes of catching up, Elliot's wife noticed a funny smell, and she remembered the fish, which by now had become one with the pan. Well, Elliot thought it would be a good idea to air out the house, so he opened up the garage door. And what do you think appeared next Friday in the Stony Haven News? Elliot opened up the paper and noticed a picture of the inside of his garage in a full-page Angela Maverick ad with the headline, "Do you want a slob to be your village clerk?" Well, that got Elliot mad. Up until that point, he had been content to simply point to his record and ignore all the name-calling. But being called a slob, well, that for him was... That was stepping over the line. Stepping over the line of good conduct. Those unwritten laws, you know. 20th century civilization and all that kind of thing. He hired a few high school kids to collect Angela Maverick's garbage on Tuesday nights. He and his campaign manager spent many hours analyzing it. And if you're around last autumn, about September or so, you may have seen ads attacking Angela Maverick for the kind of breakfast cereal she buys her kids, with the implication that, if elected, she would feed us all a box of garbage as well. And of course, when Elliot found a wrapper for no-frills toilet paper, the election suddenly looked more promising. Everyone knows, his new ad said, that no-frills paper tends to clog up cesspools in the long run. Doesn't Angela Maverick care about her cesspool? What kind of village clerk would she make? And towards the end of the campaign, the Mavericks were burning their garbage, the Grosschilds were keeping all their shades down, and the ads in the newspaper had resorted to blatant name-calling and mockery. It was generally expected that Halloween would yield some significant developments as voters found out who was more generous to their kids. And I remember the election eve edition of the Stony Haven News in the endorsement section. They endorsed any write-in candidate of your choice. Never forget that. Of course, we all know who won the election. We all know what's gone on since then. But I thought it was rather interesting to look back on those hectic days. Nothing like that this year, but maybe next year they get a little bit more intense. Next year, I understand, is both the mayor and the village clerk at the same time. It could be something making Stony Haven ugly, which a lot of us in neighboring towns have been waiting for quite some time. That's my little trip down memory lane. Be happy to hear yours. Our telephone number is 632-6901. And, of course, we have to check in with the tripods, which we will be doing. First, Woody Guthrie has something of importance to pass along, a little story of his own.
If you'll gather round me, children, A story I will tell. A pretty boy, Floyd, an outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee. It was Saturday afternoon. His wife beside him in his wagon. As into town they rode. There a deputy sheriff approached him in a manner rather rude, using vulgar words of language, and his wife, she overheard. Pretty boy grabbed the log chain, and the deputy grabbed his gun, and in the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. There's a many a starving farmers, the same old story told, how this outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little homes. Others tell you of a stranger that come to beg a meal, and underneath his napkin left $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City. It was on a Christmas day. There come a whole carload of groceries with a letter that did say, well, you say that I'm an outlaw, you say that I'm a thief. Here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. Now as through this world I ramble, I see lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six-gun, some with a fountain pen. But as through your life you travel, and as through your life you roam, you won't never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.
Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, proudly presents The Exciting Adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle for peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. When we left our friends last week, they were gathered in Charlie's house discussing Howard, who is still in the hospital. And as we join them later on in the evening, they're still talking about this.
You know who would know what to do in a case like this? That detective. What was his name? I think it used to be on NBC.
Was it Cannon? Or Mannix?
No, Mr. Tripod. Both of those were on CBS.
Oh, well, excuse me, Charlie.
I think whatever it was had at least three syllables in it. And I can't for the life of me remember what they were.
Well, I really don't see what the difference makes who it was, Charlie. The point is, Howard's still out there in that wretched hospital, and we're just sitting around here in your house doing absolutely nothing.
Could you repeat that, please, Kathy? I didn't hear what you said.
Well, I mean, anything could be happening to him over in that place, and here we are talking about television shows. I don't understand you sometimes, Charlie.
I know it wasn't Columbo, or that other one, McMillan. It wasn't his wife, either.
Maybe it was McCloud. He could solve anything.
No, that wasn't it either.
Dennis Weaver played that part so well.
I'm going to go upstairs and get some rest. And maybe then I'll be able to hear what you people are saying. Was it Beretta, Charlie?
Yes, that was it, Mr. Tripod. Oh, what a great show that was.
But that was on ABC, you blockhead!
Well, nobody's perfect, Mr. Tripod. I mean, I really wish it stopped jumping.
Oh, look at Uncle Jonathan!
Wow, he's falling down all three flights of stairs.
Look at him go!
How about that?
He looked like an acrobat.
I'll say.
Oh, I sure wish Howard could have seen that one.
So do I. But at least we found out the name of that detective.
What, Beretta?
Yeah, you have no idea how that was bothering me. Wow.
What about it, Charlie?
What about what, Kathy?
Beretta. Oh, why are you trying to remember that program?
Oh, well, because, I mean, it was... Oh, rats.
Well, now that we've gone through everything there is to talk about, let's try to face the issue, all right? Now we've got to rescue Howard. There's no two ways about that. He's my husband, and he's your French, and Pop, he's your own son. So what are we waiting for? They can't keep him in there. They can't say he's insane.
Kathy's right. And even if he is insane, that's pretty good considering all he's been through in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. I raised that boy since he was my son. I mean, we grew up together. No, that's not it either.
I think I know what you're trying to say, Mr. Tripod.
Oh, no, you don't, Charlie. Howard's my son. That's what I'm trying to say. And no hospital's going to separate my son from his father.
We should just go over there and demand to see him.
And take him home, too, Charlie. He's not going to stay in that place.
You're absolutely right, Kathy.
Come on, let's go.
I'll drive. Hi, everybody. Where are you going?
Oh, get out of the way. We're going to go rescue you.
Yeah, nobody's going to stop us.
Get out of the way, Howard. We're going to get you.
Howard.
And so, as Kathy, Charlie, and Pop set out to rescue Howard from the hospital, Howard suddenly comes home. What does it all mean? And why is Uncle Jonathan suddenly losing his hearing? You want to be with us next week, when we'll hear Pop say,
"Does this mean we're not going?"
That's next week on The Exciting Adventures of the Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
This is Jim Ross, host of the Bluegrass Show here at WUSB, inviting you to step out on the back porch with me each Wednesday night at 6:30. We'll listen to some of the best... We'll listen to some of the best bluegrass music anywhere. Hey, sit down. Along with some old-time fiddle bands, some western swing, bluegrass. Get out of here. Hey, sit down. Bluegrass news, so join me and my pals. Every Wednesday night at... Every Wednesday at 6:30 in the p.m. for Back Porch Bluegrass on 90.1 FM Stony Brook.
Hey, get out of here.
Sorry about that. Okay, yeah, we've had flies, we've had dogs, we've had just about everything in the studio tonight. But it's time to turn it over to the listeners, as we usually do about this time on a Saturday night. What an action-packed adventure that was, we just heard. There's nothing left to have happen now. The whole thing has come full circle, and I have no idea where it's going to go. If it's going to go. Exciting news, folks. Exciting news just came in off the wire. The New York City Transit Authority announced yesterday... Yeah, our wire's kind of slow, okay? Announced yesterday that it will instruct its token booth clerks to accept pennies from people buying tokens. The authority's president, Alan Kuiper, said the authority would also replace the "no pennies, please" signs at all token booths. Doesn't say what they're going to replace them with, but they will... I mean, that's wrong. Associated Press, come on, remove. That's the word you use when you're going to take something away and not put anything back. Remove. Replace means put something else in its place, but what are they going to put in its place if they accept pennies? No Canadian pennies? No Deutschmarks? I don't know. That's a fight, though, that I was always... in the front lines about, you know. I mean, how dare they? They raise the rate to $1.15 and they say no pennies. I mean, you're going to have pennies occasionally because pennies add up to certain amounts. You'd have pennies at any amount. I mean, who are they to say no pennies? How about no fare increase, okay? Listen to me when I say that. Sorry, I didn't mean to get all mad like that, but it gets on you sometimes, you know. Oh, speaking of New York City, if you recall, there's going to be another area code change real soon. That's right, they want to change the Bronx to 917. It's currently 212. They want to make it 917. They also want to make all cellular phones and beepers and things like that in New York City also part of the 917 area code, which is going to confuse everybody. But supposedly it will save the 212 area code from running out of numbers, which is the reason they created 718 a few years back. But New York City has a different idea. New York City wants the Bronx to join the 718 area code, not 917, as proposed by New York Telephone. The city's Department of Telecommunications wants 917 reserved only for cellular telephones and pages, which is just fine with me. The telephone company, as we said, had proposed transferring them from 212 to 917, along with all phones in the Bronx, but the Commissioner of Telecommunications, William F. Squadron, maintains that the Bronx belongs in the 718 area code, which serves Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. This will allow consumers outside Manhattan to have seven-digit dialing within all the city except Manhattan, Mr. Squadron said. Responding to Bronx officials' complaints, Mr. Squadron added the Bronx should not be isolated from all other parts of New York. The telecommunications department made its proposal as an alternative to the one that New York Telephone filed with the State Public Service Commission in June. The commission has set a hearing on the proposals for November 13th. Those might be kind of interesting to attend. What area code do you want to be in? You know, we never get those choices out here. We're stuck in 516 for the rest of our lives. 516 isn't even close to getting filled up. I was looking at the figures for this, and 516, forget it. Forget it. It'll be decades, at least. Anyway, in his proposal, the telephone company justified the need for adding the 917 area code by citing concerns about a dwindling supply of numbers to assign in Manhattan. New York Telephone says that without a new area code, it will run out of numbers for the 212 area by 1993. The company and the telecommunications department now agree that adding the 917 area code would keep the city from using up the numbers until the 21st century. Mr. Squadron said that assigning the Bronx to 917 would deplete the numbers sooner. But Stephen Marcus, a New York Telephone spokesman, said the 718 proposal would use the numbers up first. So I think you leave it up to the people, you know? People vote what area code they want to be in. Staten Island's going to vote whether they want to secede this year. Not from the nation, from New York City. That should be interesting. What else? What else is going on? This guy in Albania defected. Did you hear about that? A prominent Albanian writer announced in Paris that he was seeking political asylum in France. And it was considered a blow to the government of President Rami Alia, which has been slowly, in response to the things we've been saying on this program, slowly moving Albania away from an isolationist strain of communism. And the writer's name is Ismail Kadar. He's the author of 10 novels, 3 volumes of poetry, and numerous essays. He said in a declaration that he had decided to defect because he had become disillusioned with the Alia government. And I am told that for Mr. Kadar to leave Albania, it's comparable to Mark Twain's asking for political asylum in England. Assuming that Mark Twain was still alive, that is. You have to take that into account. Oh, yes. It's been an exciting week. The United States Forest Service was so taken by rock carvings found in a national forest that it started building a center to tell visitors how an ancient civilization carved them as messages to spirits. Yes, but when Jeff Kirker, an Oregon artist, saw a magazine article about the carvings, or petroglyphs, in the Siskiyou National Forest, he sent the message of his own to the Forest Service. The carvings are his handiwork and are only 15 years old. I wasn't trying to fool anyone, Mr. Kirker said Tuesday. I was interested in how long it might take to make them. All it took was one afternoon. The carvings were discovered in 1987 on 3 boulders along the South Fork of the Coquille River. According to Patty Burrell, a Forest Service spokeswoman, archaeologists examined the carvings and decided they were genuine, she said. The carvings were taken to a Forest Service office for preservation, and replicas were carved for the interpretive center. The agency is waiting to see Mr. Kirker's evidence before deciding whether his story is true. Meanwhile, work has been suspended on the interpretive center. And, straight out of Mapplethorpe country, Cincinnati, Ohio, they really are entering the 20th century there. A judge has dismissed criminal charges against 2 men who were cited for holding hands in a parked car. Holding hands in a parked car. Judge Joseph Lubbers of the Hamilton County Municipal Court dismissed the case Wednesday after a defense lawyer argued that the charge of disorderly conduct by creating an offensive condition was too vague. No standard of conduct is specified, the lawyer Catherine Adams said of the charge. It does not notify a person what society is requiring. The 2 men were cited on September 27th in Eden Park on the city's southeast side. Officer Marty Polk testified that he was patrolling the park after sunset when he shined a flashlight into their car and saw Mr. Kenyon holding Mr. Harden's hand in Mr. Harden's lap. Mr. Kenyon said he was consoling Mr. Harden about a death in his family. "You don't have to put your hand in another man's lap to console him," Officer Polk said, adding that the situation would have been equally offensive if it involved a man and a woman. "Be careful, guys, girls, when you go out there. Careful of what you do. Holding hands, I don't know." Miss Adams noted that the two men were cited 3 days after gay rights advocates demonstrated outside the court at the start of the obscenity trial of an art gallery and its director for showing photographs by Robert Mapplethorpe that depict homosexual acts. But Assistant Police Chief Ed Ammon said after the hearing that there had been no crackdown on homosexuals as a result of the Mapplethorpe controversy. This was just good old-fashioned closed-mindedness. Cincinnati, yeah. And Ron Kovic is back in the news. Last year, Massapequa native Ron Kovic made his big screen debut with a cameo appearance in Born on the 4th of July, a movie that recounted his combat experiences in Vietnam. Well, now the veteran-turned-anti-war activist is making a small screen appearance in a 30-second commercial that protests the presence of American troops in Saudi Arabia. "Like millions of Americans, I'm deeply concerned about what our country is doing in the Middle East," Kovic says in the commercial, which will air through Tuesday on News 12 here on Long Island and also on the cable news network. "We have thousands of young men and women in the Persian Gulf, not to defend democracy, but to protect the big oil companies." The camera, which until that point has focused on Kovic's head and shoulders, pulls back to show how he was sitting in a wheelchair. "How many more body bags and graveyards and monuments, how many more Americans coming home in wheelchairs like me will it take before we learn?" he tells viewers in a script he largely wrote himself. The commercial was funded and produced by an Arizona-based peace organization. "Stand up. Speak out. Didn't we promise ourselves that we would never let this happen again?" Kovic, 44 years old, was a young Marine sergeant in 1968 when Viet Cong bullets ripped through his chest and severed his spinal cord. The critically acclaimed Born on the 4th of July, based on Kovic's autobiography and starring Tom Cruise, chronicles his Vietnam experiences and his resulting transition from soldier to anti-war activist. "I'm doing this because I don't want war," Kovic said in a telephone interview from Los Angeles, where he now lives. "I understand what war is. I live with it every day. We've got to find another way of solving this. I don't want young American men and women to die for oil." When he speaks out in Vietnam, there's a certain moral legitimacy that comes from spending 22 years in the wheelchair, said Jim Driscoll, director of Operation Real Security, the Arizona-based group that funded production of the ad. "People can't just say, 'You coward.'" The group, which serves as an informal consultant to grassroots anti-war groups around the country, distributed the commercial to the local groups, which then raised the money to put them on the air in their communities. Locally, the commercials are being sponsored by the Long Island Alliance for Peaceful Alternatives, which represents about 40 local groups. The group raised $2,440 to pay for 12 spots on News 12 and 10 spots on CNN. The ad represents a sense of urgency that people feel because, as Defense Secretary Dick Cheney announced, there are going to be 300,000 U.S. troops there soon, said Margaret Melkonian, spokeswoman for the Alliance. "People should have something to say about whether we go to war." That article written by Laura Muhan, today's Newsday. And sobering material here. Sobering indeed. It's 1129-632-6901. Enough babbling. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. Hang on. Having trouble with the lines here. Keep talking. Okay, wait a minute. We're going to have to open things up here. Just keep talking. Pretend that I can hear you. I told you about the World Series last week. Yeah, keep talking. You know, someday we'll raise enough money to make this place function like a real radio station, but until then... sorry, I cannot hear you at all.
Well, you better stop the crap, or I'll kick your fucking ass.
Okay, can't hear a thing. Good evening.
Hey, what's up, Eric?
How you doing?
All right. it really would suck if, you know, if they would destroy those pine barrens.
Yeah, it sure would, because there wouldn't be any left, you know? Or there'd be very few, and they'd be much weaker.
Uh-huh. Where are those pine barrens at?
Well, pine barrens are all throughout eastern Long Island. The vast majority, I believe, are in Manorville, which is fairly close to you, I think. There's some in South Setauket, in fact.
Right.
If you drive down the Wisconsin Highway and you look to your left and to your right, you'll see these little tiny pine trees that don't seem to serve any purpose, but they do.
They do.
And even if they didn't, you know, so what? Mm-hmm. We need some wildlife, and the wildlife needs a place to live, too.
Yeah. And when people don't understand, you know, trees are the things that clean the oxygen. I mean,
uh-huh.
You know, that they breathe in carbon dioxide, and they bring out oxygen, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I'm totally against that because, you know, I like to see trees and you know, bushes, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Know?
Yeah, nice things for people to have, you know.
And I was upset because my house, you know, it had a lot of trees in the back. And when my mother got married, the guy that she got married to said that trees, you know, just make, you know, they make more leaves and they get in the way.
Oh, boy.
One day, I don't know, he hired some people to clean the backyard up, and he cut all the trees down.
Well, that's just great,
yeah.
And
so, you know, we had to go run, you know, to these, you know, these nurseries and just buy trees and just, you know, put them all over the yard. So
wait, you put new trees up?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
So, what was his response to that?
Well, he really had nothing to say about it, because my mother, you know, really got down, you know, really, you know, because that day when he cleaned it, you know, nobody was here.
Uh-huh.
And he just felt like if he was...
Has he been put in his place?
Yeah, he has.
Okay, he hasn't tried anything like that again.
No, he hasn't. And, you know, it was just, you know, it upset us, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, trees are like old friends. They really are.
Yeah.
I mean, the certain trees that you count... I mean, I think we all in our lives know of a certain tree. And just knowing it's there, I don't know, somehow it lends comfort. You know, if you can, like, stand underneath it or just pass by and see it's there in the winter, in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trees are living creatures just like we are.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I hate about them is, you know, when you have to rake.
Well, you don't have to rake, you know.
Yeah, in a way, but over here where I live, you do.
Yeah.
Because we have gate, and it piles up all over the gate around it.
Uh-huh.
And it just, like, grows and grows every time leaves fall.
Yeah, but, you know, people have... Yeah, there've been trees. There've been fields before people were around, and they somehow survived without people raking them up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess where you live now, you need to do it in order to remain at a certain level in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really concern me that much if leaves don't get raked up. I mean, there are more pressing things. What's good about it though is you get to be outside and you get to be doing something, and you know, hopefully that'll be a positive kind of development. And you make a leaf pile and kids can jump in it, you know?
Yeah, well, there's no, you know, there's no kids around here. I was going to ask you, did you hear about the government finally coming to a conclusion about the budget?
Oh, did they really? Well, that's nice.
Yeah, I heard it on today, yeah.
About bloody time. I wasted, what, a quarter of a year on a budget?
Yeah, really. And,
what do you think of this move to throw out all the incumbents because of all these tax problems? I've been reading about this in various places.
Say that again.
Well, since the entire House of Representatives, I believe, is up for re-election this year, there's a move to throw everybody out that's an incumbent because the American public believes they're paying too much in taxes. What do you think of that?
I don't know. I just let them. I really don't get involved. You know, I'm not the type of person that worries. I just you know, go along with what, you know, with what happens. You know, I just.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess you got to do that, right?
Yeah, I just, you know, let them do whatever they want. And get involved, you know.
I don't know if you want to let them do anything they want.
Well, I don't get myself really, really, you know, upset because of stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, just, none of my friends are like that in school, so, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, but, you know, time, and then, you know, I put my foot down, you know, like, with, you know, things that happen with the ozone layer and all that stuff, but the government, you know, government things, I really don't, like, you know, really get into it. So.
I heard the Senate passed the Clean Air Bill. I don't know if that's true, but...
I don't know. I haven't heard nothing.
I also don't know what good that's going to do, but hopefully it'll do something.
Yep. the whole, you know, the weather's getting all screwed up, you know.
Uh-huh.
I heard on News 12 that was supposedly getting snow already.
Well, that's
Monday.
Pretty controversial stuff there.
Yeah. Oh, no, the whole world's like, and in the summer we had, it was, you know, really hot and...
Well, you know, what I suggest people do with Election Day coming up and everything like that and the winter setting in, call up everybody that's running for a town position and find out where they stand on this mall.
Right,
and if
yeah.
they stand for the mall, you know, vote accordingly. If they stand against it, take that into account.
Right.
But, you know, spread the word around, too.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of people are doing this. I'm very impressed by the number of people that are going around with petitions and talking to other people and raising some consciousness. It's something that I always knew we had in us, but it's good to see it actually in action.
Yeah, it's good, you know, to see, you know, things being done about, you know, trying to improve things around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's pretty much. Hold on, Eric. A friend of mine wants to ask you something.
Uh-oh. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Jimmy!
That didn't seem to be a question. Well, I'm sure they have lots to talk about. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Pretty good. You know, Halloween's coming up. I hope everybody has a little holiday spirit out there.
Yeah, we sure do.
I hope you like dress up. I know what I'm going to be.
What are you going to be?
A mutilated corpse with blood dripping from my mouth, all chopped up, turned inside out.
How do you get a, I mean, is there a costume that does that, or do you have to work on it?
Just twisted Harley and just demented.
Yeah? Sounds cool.
All you have to do is, there's a costume by a store by me, and all you have to do is press a button and it does it.
Uh-huh.
I'm serious.
Well, that's kind of neat.
And you gotta get, like, your Halloween parties, and then you gotta put on your Halloween music, your death metal, you put on Pull the Plug, and then you smash away.
Yeah, well, that's the finer things of life. Are you going to any Halloween parties in your area?
There's a couple of Halloween parties, but all I like to do is just smash away.
Smash away.
Yeah.
Okay, well, don't let me stop you from doing that.
No, smash away.
Okay.
Do more.
Thanks for calling. 632-6901. Yeah, we got open lines here. Open lines. Everyone's out having fun for Halloween. Hey, have you been following this, this daily news story? I could not believe it when I heard what was going on. I mean, I assume everybody out there knows what's happening. Update you from, the New York Times, their account of this, and I'm sure they're kind of intrigued by what's happening at a rival newspaper. A smoldering 10-month labor dispute between the Daily News and its 10 labor unions became a major confrontation the other day after a violent melee outside the newspaper's Brooklyn printing plant. Members of the truck drivers' union left their jobs at the plant on Pacific Street in the Fort Greene section after a pre-dawn argument over whether a union member claiming a medical disability could sit down as he worked. That's what could close down the Daily News forever. The argument over whether someone can sit down while he works. Be an interesting person to interview in the years ahead, I'll say that. You shut down a newspaper by wanting to sit down while you were working. Incredible. Incredible legacy there. Anyway, several delivery trucks were firebombed and the radiators of 40 others were punctured. A bus carrying replacement workers that arrived less than an hour after the incident was attacked with sticks and stones. Now, that's so incredible. You have an argument, you know, with the boss over something, and less than an hour later, a bus filled with people. And I understand the bus had Pennsylvania license plates, too. It shows up with replacement workers, permanent replacement workers. Makes you wonder, you know, maybe this was planned out. Maybe they sort of set it up so they could drive the union out. I mean, never in all the cases of this this kind of thing have I seen something so apparently clear-cut. Anyway, late in the afternoon, a management spokeswoman announced that the Daily News considered the union on strike and said it would dismiss as many of the 200 workers involved as it could replace the other night. But Michael J. Alvino, the president of the paper's 700-member drivers' union, the newspaper and mail deliverers union of New York, denied that his members were on strike, insisting that the deliverers had been locked out as part of a premeditated strategy by the paper's owner, the Chicago-based Tribune Company, to provoke a full-scale walkout by all its unions. There was no strike called. I'm not looking for a strike, the 54-year-old union leader said. All of my members will show up for work. But the management spokeswoman, and you got to wonder about this, management spokeswoman Lisa G. Robinson said of the drivers, "We told them that because they had exercised their legal right to strike, we had exercised our legal right to hire permanent replacement workers." I mean, come on. You've exercised your legal right to strike. I mean, they say they're not on strike. You know, you got to sort of take that into account. Let's see if I can get the specifics as to what happened. I know I've got them around here somewhere. Okay, somewhere around here are the specifics as to what occurred, and I will get to them. Hey, Mike, how's the concert?
It's cool.
Mike, the building manager, is here from the slamming away downstairs at the hardcore concert.
Yeah, a lot of kids having fun.
Well, that's what it's all about, you know? That's what we're here for. And they're supporting WUSB at the same time, which is a great thing to tell people in the future, you know? I supported WUSB way back when.
Yeah. When, Eric?
Now, I guess. How can I lose something like this? Maybe I forgot to cut it out of the paper. Oh, well. I was talking about the Daily News. Have you been following that?
No.
You haven't been following it at all?
Although I know that they're...
Living in a vacuum again?
They're the place where they had a fire is not far from where my girlfriend lives. So I just hope the riots don't spill over to our house.
Can you blame them for setting fire to trucks? I mean, they get into an argument with somebody over... I mean, this guy was injured on the job... He has a medical piece of paper that says he has to sit down, and the management won't let him sit down while he's doing his job. So they fire him on the spot. The union person steps in to argue this, and the union person is escorted out by uniformed security guards, and everybody else sort of runs out to protest this, and at that moment, management says, "Okay, you're on strike, you've been replaced." Less than an hour later, a busload of people from Pennsylvania comes, replacing them.
Scabs,
what have you. But the thing is, they were all ready to I mean, they didn't put out ads and papers and find people. They were there waiting to take over their jobs, and it seemed like it was very well calculated.
Oh, I would understand why a truck would be burnt.
Yeah, and they want to create a non-union paper. I mean, I was watching this on TV. You know, a lot of these guys working there for 45 years... You know, really loyal to the paper being treated this way? I mean, in my opinion, I don't think the paper deserves to exist anymore. You know, not in this present state. If they're going to treat their workers that way, it's not serving anybody. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things that the Tribune is linked to. The Chicago Tribune, WPIX-TV, Daily News. And I think somebody should take that all into account. Although I did tape Star Trek off Channel 11 tonight. Huh? I feel embarrassed by doing that, but... other than that, you know, make your
fast forward through the commercials, and you're doing yourself justice.
But I mean, you know, it's kind of like what we were talking about over the last couple of weeks. You know, of people standing up to say what is on their mind, even if they face the prospect of being arrested for creating a disturbance at a town meeting or something. These folks, they stood up to protest the treatment of this one worker who was not allowed to sit down, and as a result, the entire paper may be shut down. They may have all lost their jobs. You know, but it's a matter of principle. It's something that you have to do.
Oh, principle is very important. Like what was going on this week at the blood drive.
The
Haitian student organization was very upset, and rightfully so, over the fact that it's the Department of Health policy not to accept blood from Haitian people.
Imagine that if you were just turned away from a blood drive because of your race.
I mean, I couldn't imagine how it would feel to be on a list of people who wouldn't accept blood from you. So the blood drive did not go on.
So
they marched over to the blood drive over in the hospital and stopped it. Called stop traffic on Nichols Road.
They sat down in the middle of Nichols Road, didn't they?
Yeah.
A lot of people would say, though, that that's two wrongs, you know, and two wrongs don't make a right. You stop the blood drive, where's the blood going to come from? You know, I can see that point, is the blood going to come from?
This is really a catch-22. An injustice is being done, a very bad thing is being done, and I don't know where I stand on the issue.
Yeah.
I'm honestly up in the air.
Well, I think... It begs a response, you know, when you have tens of thousands of Haitians blocking the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
The biggest demonstration since the 60s, when you have people sitting down in the middle of Nichols Road and taking over the newspaper here on campus to get their feelings known, somebody had better listen.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had better listen to what's going on at the news, too, because that's a scary thing when they can just shut down I mean, they don't. The Tribune, I don't think, really cares about the Daily News. The Daily News has been losing money for years, so you know, why should they care if it keeps going?
And it's only one step above the Penny Saver, anyway.
Yeah, that's not the point. I mean, it's the newspapers. One of which
it
one
is
of New
York's
newspapers. Yeah. And we all thought the Post was going to
die. And if we lose the Post and the News, we'll have no more comics in New York City.
No, you got New York Newsday.
Oh, Newsday, that's true.
But I bet it won't be a quarter anymore.
No.
Why would it be, you know? They must be chortling. Chortling at the news desk in New York. All right. 632-6901, area code 516. Let's get some calls coming in. We only have 14 minutes left, and we'd like to hear from you. Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing? You got a hum on your line.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You must be calling. Wait a minute. Don't tell me. You're calling from... I don't know where you're calling from.
That's cool.
Okay.
I was very disappointed before I tried to call and somebody picked up and hung up. Could it have possibly been that guy that you were just talking to?
That god?
That guy.
Oh, that guy I was talking to. No, that guy is the building manager. Some refer to him as a god.
Today I was?
No, I don't think that was him doing that at all.
Who did that?
I don't know. You know, when did you call?
Up and hung up on me like they would do on Singer's Metal Shop.
Oh, that's awful. No, we don't treat people like that. But about what time did this happen?
A few minutes ago.
Really?
Yes.
It might have been a technical blunder. These things do happen.
Somebody picked up and hung up.
Well, these things... whoops, these things happened again. Oh, well. Oh, I don't know what goes on here. Sometimes people do that. Good evening.
No.
I don't like that tone of that voice. Okay, folks, if anybody's out there, give us a call now. Otherwise, we're going to go back to music. How's that? We only have 13 minutes left. I want to see all five lines lit. I don't think that's asking for too much. Okay, we're almost there. 632-6901. We're talking about a lot of things tonight. New York City subways. Hey.
Hi.
Kevin's here now.
Hi.
Now you're from down at the...
down under.
Down at the slamming show, huh?
Yeah.
You sound like a slammer.
No.
No? You're out of breath, so you must have been.
I was banging on the door.
Oh, that was that noise. I was wondering what that... Oh, okay. I thought it was thunder or something. So how's the show going?
Oh, it's going great.
Yeah?
As all our shows go.
Well, it's another benefit concert. We thank Steve Kreitzer for organizing it and for the band's... what band are we up to now?
The last band.
Which is?
The one that... I don't know.
You're not going to say they all sound alike. I sure hope you're not going to say that.
Seizure.
Seizure?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Seizure and who else? We got Citizens Arrest and the Lie Detectors.
Lie Detectors were great.
Were they?
Yeah. See, when you come to the shows, you never know what happens. They gave out free records. They threw out bumper stickers for free.
Uh-huh.
It was an event.
Well, you could have gotten USB bumper stickers for free, but...
And USB buttons.
But based upon the really cool response by the people that showed up, we're going to have more of these things and, you know... Maybe this year, definitely next year, and, you know, other concerts of different musical types as well. All right? Hey, we only need two more calls, 632-6901, and we'll go back to the phones. I'm sort of holding out for more calls here because there have been some silly people. You know, silly people that call up sometimes and say things that don't really make much sense?
I was one of
them. No, those are the sensible ones, actually. The silly ones are the ones that make pointed comments that, you know, and don't really have any substance to them.
What are we talking about tonight?
Daily News Strike, for one thing. Oh. We were talking about Halloween. And
a very vicious Daily News Strike.
Isn't that something, though? I mean, it's like they plan this thing out, you know? They plan to shut them down, to get the union out. Yes. It is stunning, that's for sure. 632-6901. Here you go.
How was the concert, man? The
concert's cool. Real cool. Go down and check it out.
Just cool?
Yeah,
ultra
just cool.
Cool.
Cool is fine. Cool is okay. We're quite happy with cool. All right. 632-6901. Area code 516. And Raz is coming up in just about 11 minutes with all kinds of shrieking music that will make you do strange things. As this radio station does it many times. Yes, I'm told the newspaper guild has joined the violent, scarred, day-old strike. Actually, it's 2 days old now in response to management's decision to fire all union members who did not report for work. Barry Lipton, president of Local 3 of the guild, said the news already was replacing editorial workers, an action he called illegal, and a declaration of war. We're on strike, Lipton said after hearing that the news planned to fire workers. Now we bring this newspaper to its knees. Minutes after Lipton's announcement Friday afternoon at Guild headquarters in 44th Street, about 100 members marched 8 blocks and joined picket lines at the Daily News building at 220 East 42nd Street, carrying a banner that read, "Stop Union Busting, Boycott the News." Reporter Gene Mustaine said, "Today they killed the Daily News," shaking his head outside the Union Hall. Other newspaper veterans who seemed stunned by the swiftness of events that put them on picket lines also spoke in the past tense. By nightfall, an estimated 30 editorial workers, including the entire Washington Bureau, had reported to work despite the strike action, the Daily News source said. The Guild became the 7th of 10 unions representing 2,600 workers to strike since early Thursday morning. And the news made an announcement about 2:30 p.m. yesterday. "We will permanently replace all striking employees who do not show up for work today. If the strike, these people voluntarily left their jobs." Well, nothing more need be said there. Let's see who's out there. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I have a point to make. You know, when that kid called up before and he got disconnected, you know, things happen like that sometimes.
Well, you know, things happen like that a lot around here. We think it might be the phone system, but then again, you know, it could be itchy fingers.
Yeah, well, fuck off.
Okay, good evening.
Fuck you!
All right. We're going back to music, folks, and we'll see you again next week, I guess. Good night. Oh, the CD player's going to give me crap, too. There we go. Ah, yes, well, stay tuned for Raz. And whatever else comes your way. Good night. Thank you.
You are in tune to the Power Surge Halloween Special. Us, the Power Surge, 90.1 WSB in Stony Brook, bringing you the most brutal death, speed, and thrash metal in the world. Yeah, without doubt. And the Raz here, surviving a day of death trip last week. I don't know what happened last week. I have no idea. I'm not interested. And I tell you what, it's going to be great tonight because we have a great, great Halloween special. Which means, basically, that we're going to be doing some pretty sick stuff tonight. Yeah, giveaways. I got the new creator, some new destruction. I have some necro death that I picked up. A lot of underground stuff. We're going to be getting really out of hand tonight. Believe me when I say it. And also, we get an extra hour of the power surge, which is like such a great thing because we turn the clock back. And at the witching hour, 12 o'clock, special surprise, an extra torture for the Raz. Right now, some Bathory. Let's wake up, folks, and wake up the dead. Raise them. Come to life. 632-6901. The phone requests. Most evil. Hit it.